And good morning, everybody. It is right now 7:40 here on the mighty 690 KGGF, 63 degrees right now. And we have in studio with us this morning, of course, we have them every Wednesday. We have 2K State Extension agents, and we have in studio today, James Coover and David Scrantz. Guys, welcome. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to have you guys in studio, and we'll go ahead and get it started. First, we'll start with you, James, and you want, a few things you want to talk about was soybean futures was one of the things you want to talk about.
Yeah, so I'm definitely not an economist by any means, but there are some interesting things going on with the markets right now. And so right now, the soybean markets are actually up, which is surprising because they have not been up for a long time. And so they're above $10 right now. I mean, they got to a high of 10.46, which was very good. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of guys I know that probably sold some soybeans or at least put some on their market, especially with soybean harvest coming. And so it was a huge deal. But it's a surprising change from the low of 8.65. That was only on August the 10th. And so it's literally completely changed over a dollar and a half in a month's time. And so the soybeans are kind of turning around, and they kind of think that they might stick to a higher market for some time just because of the market forces that are involved. And so there's a lot of talk going along in the economic and the market world right now about everything that's going on. And so what mostly this is from is partly because of the weaker U.S. dollar. I mean, it's not good in all cases, but when we have a weaker dollar, we often not have a stronger export market just because the valuation of our commodity markets. Mm-hmm. And so, and of course, the vast majority of our soybeans go to China. They're the world's importer of soybeans. Very other countries, they don't do a whole lot of that. And so the projections for what China will import are 2.8 billion bushels. So it's a lot of soybeans going over there. And that's actually up 25% from last year when, you know, there's a lot of embargoes and all that stuff going on with China last year. Right. And so a lot of that trade war stuff is still kind of going on, but it's softened, I guess. People kind of gave up on it. And so that's sort of what happened. And they're importing a lot more. But part of this increase is actually because, A, there was there's a drought in Argentina right now. They actually have the flip season because they're on the other side of the planet. Right. And so, you know, their harvest and season is a little bit different than ours. But they're kind of far enough south that they still have this seasonality that we do, rather than Brazil, which is tropical pretty much. Mm-hmm. And so China had pushed growing soybeans, because of the everything that was going on internationally. Basically, with the competition with the U.S., they were pushing farmers to grow soybeans. Unfortunately, what happened is that means they grew less corn acres. And because they grew less corn acres, they had less to feed their animals, which means they started feeding wheat to the animals because it was cheaper. Well, then this created sort of a, not really a food scare perhaps, but more or less some idea that perhaps we might run out of other foods for people. And so it really kind of chained all together, and they realized that there's just no way that we can stop importing soybeans. And so in the end, the Chinese economist said, we're kind of stuck here. We really have no choice. There's just over a billion people to feed, and we just don't have the amount of agricultural land to feed them. So we just have to keep importing soybeans, which is a high protein, high energy feedstuff. And so China imports nearly 90% of their soybeans, which is a lot considering the massive population. And of course, the Chinese people, their standard of living is somewhat increasing. And so they want higher proteins, basically. And so for at least the next foreseeable future, I mean, it looks like the markets in that direction are going to be improved versus what they were. And that's kind of the same thing that happened with the corn prices and with the wheat as well. We don't export as much wheat to China. It's kind of a world export. But we do export corn there as well. And all of those markets have been increasing in the last past couple of weeks. And so it's really good news. And it's kind of the buzz in the economic world of of commodity markets anyways. And so it's some interesting things going on, but at least for now, it's all for the better. So.
And so is this like an all-time high for soybeans, or is this just a high, a recent high?
A recent high. Okay. Yeah, the all-time high, that happened years ago. I mean, it's it's hard to beat the days of 2014 to 15 when the markets were just astronomical. And so, yeah, that was a while ago.
So it's just a recent high. But still, though, that's really good, though, especially if you're planting, if you have soybeans. So that's a really good future for you. And hopefully it'll stay that way. So.
Yeah. It's good time if it can just hang out there for just, another little bit to get the soybeans in. Yeah, it was a good deal. So a lot of guys, of course, are putting theirs on the futures as well and selling them before they get harvested. But still.
And I know, has all this rain helped out the soybeans for the most part?
Yeah, that rain that we got was almost a month ago, honestly, mm-hmm. or 3 weeks ago. It really made our soybeans. We wouldn't have had soybeans had given it not rained. And so they were filling at the time. They were struggling. Some of them were going backwards. We got that rain. A lot of them turned around. And so that drought earlier definitely hurt the yield because they just couldn't fill out as much to capitalize on that rain.
Right.
But without it, we'd have got nothing. And it's starting to get dry out there again. But we're towards the end where the soybeans are drying down rather than filling out. So we're getting to it. So,
and the good thing was that rain wasn't a flooding rain. It was just it was a good, as I was saying, the earth getting a good drink of water kind of make it healthy. And then we had a little bit of rain yesterday. I think just nearly a hair under an inch. It wasn't obviously it didn't pour or anything, but it was a nice constant rain. So that probably helped out as well.
Yeah, it didn't make it far into the district though. It kind of stuck around Coffeyville.
Yeah, hang out around Coffeyville.
Yeah, it didn't quite make it into the rest.
Yeah, I think it got. Gotten a little bit in Labette as well. I think it was over in Chautauqua, something like that as well. But again, it was a slow mover and didn't move very much, and it was mostly missed, I think, for the most part. But it did get about 3/4 of an inch.
That's
it did also keep our temperatures down yesterday. It was only a high of like 68 yesterday, so that was very pleasant.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, well, James, we'll come back to you in the second part of the program. You did say you're going to talk about beet planting in the second part of the program. We're going to come over to Davin. And Davin, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing good. How are you?
I am doing good. And you said this morning that you wanted to talk about goats.
Yes, I'm going to talk a little bit about goats this morning and focusing more on the basics of goats and the different types of goats in case there's anyone out there who might be thinking about getting goats, raising a few goats themselves, because there are three different types of goats. There's dairy goats, meat goats, and then there's even fiber goats, which is the Angora and Cashmere breeds of goats, where you get your Angora or Cashmere sweaters. The fiber comes from those breeds of goats. So if you're wanting to raise goats and maybe you're not sure if you want to do dairy, meat, even fiber goats isn't as popular anymore. They were pretty popular back in the 80s and 90s, especially down around San Angelo, Texas. But then the market and the government subsidies kind of fell out of the mohair market. So not as many people raise those goats now, but that's definitely something you could raise if you were interested in maybe spinning or carding your own fiber. However, dairy and meat goats, especially meat goats, are the most popular types of goats to raise at the moment. For a long time, dairy goats were definitely the most popular. And in around the 90s, when the boer goats started being imported from South Africa, meat goats started to gain popularity. And they're probably the most popular type of goats right now. We see a lot of people raising them in different parts of the country. And then, of course, a lot of 4-H kids raise meat goats nowadays. And so if you're trying to decide between the two types of goats, one, of course, is personal preference. There's several different breeds, so choosing one that will meet your goals and that you also maybe is the one that you think is cute, or if you have more of a pasture setup or you don't want as have to spend as much time managing and caring for the goats, you might choose the Spanish breed of meat goat because they're really hardy. They do well on pasture. Whereas dairy goats, of course, they're dairy goats, so you'll have to milk them at least once a day. Twice a day is usually best, so you'll have a bigger time commitment. there. And each one of these breeds have been developed for specific traits. So the dairy goats, of course, have been developed for milk production. Not saying that you can't raise them for meat, but they don't have as much muscling as the meat goats do. And the reverse is true for meat goats. They've been developed for meat, so you could milk them. They just won't have the milk production that the dairy goats do.
I won't have the same quality as well, most likely.
Right, exactly. Yeah, just because the selection has been emphasized on different traits. So if you're thinking about dairy goats, there are 7 main breeds of dairy goats. So once you've decided, what type of goat you want to raise, the decision-making isn't done yet, because then you need to decide which specific breed you want. So that could be decided on the temperament of the breed, what breeders are local in the area if you don't want to travel very far. Within the 7 breeds of dairy goats, 4 of them are referred to as the Swiss breeds because they were developed in the Swiss Alps. And those are the Saanen, Alpine, Toggenburg, and Oberhalsli. The Saanen is the breed that has the highest milk production. So maybe if someone's wanting to really get into dairy goats, even maybe set up a small dairy, Saanens might be the way to go because they have that milk production. Second behind them is the Alpine. And Alpines are one of the most common breeds of dairy goats because they have high milk production as well. And where Saanens, for their breed standards, they have to be solid white or cream. Alpines can be any color, so a lot of times people prefer that because they get a little bit more variety.
Right. Not everybody looks the same.
So. Yeah. And then the other 3 breeds are the Nubian, La Mancha, and Nigerian Dwarf. So the Nubian can be any color as well, and they'll have floppy ears with their Roman nose. They were developed in Egypt, so they're a little bit more heat tolerant, and they have high butter fat. So if you're interested in producing or making butter or cheese, having that butter fat content in the milk is really important as well. And then the La Mancha was the breed that was actually developed here in the U.S. And you may have seen goats around the fair that look like they don't have any ears because they have very, very small ears. Gopher-like ears, or they're also called elf ears, that are right next to their head, and that would be the La Mancha. So they have very sweet personalities, but some people kind of shy away from them because they think they look kind of weird without those ears.
Right.
And then there's also the Nigerian Dwarf, which is the only miniature breed of dairy goat. They've become very popular as 4-H projects and also pets over the years. So that may also be something for you to consider, is that if you get the Nigerian Dwarf, you can milk them and get that milk. Of course, since they're a miniature breed, they don't have the milk production. They do, however, have the highest butter fat content for their milk. And then you can also market and sell those kids as pets as well. And then as far as meat goats go, there's the boar, which of course is the most popular. They're white with the red heads. You've probably seen them a lot around the fairs. And they were developed in South Africa. So while they have the most muscling and produce the most meat and have the highest growth rate, they're not as parasite tolerant. So they won't be quite as hardy here on pasture and will take a little bit more intensive management for them to stay healthy. And then there's also the Spanish goat that is very hardy and does well on pasture. They're more parasite tolerant. They just don't quite have the muscling of the boar. And there's also the Kinko, which is similar to the Spanish. And then the Tennessee meat goat, or the stiff leg, which is also referred to as the fainting goat. So they can kind of be fun to have around. They don't actually faint. Their muscles just stiffen up. But when the kids are younger, they don't have control of that as well. So the kids tend to actually stiffen up and then fall over. But of course, they never tend to do that when you're trying to catch them, and it would be convenient.
Right. I've seen plenty of videos on that, and I don't know. I just laugh at it every time because they'll just, I don't, is it just their muscles just, they just lock up from, is it from being nervous, or what is it about? Is that just, how is it, how they're reacting to the situation?
Yeah, it's kind of a combination, like you said. They're nervous and reacting to the situation. So if they're caught off guard, their muscles will stiffen up, and it's a genetic defect that they have. So the breed was actually kind of first developed as a scapegoat. They would put a fainting goat
Which comes from the name scapegoat.
Right, with a herd of dairy goats or meat goats, essentially higher quality goats. So if there was a predator like a coyote that came in and was chasing the goats, well, the fainting goat would, you know, stiffen up and fall over, and then the coyote or whatever predator would go for that goat because it's the easy target, and leave the other goats away. And then people realized that they do actually have quite a bit of muscling for their size and started developing them more as a breed.
All right. So, I do have a question I want to ask about goats, but we'll have to do it after the break because we're coming up on our break. But again, the fainting goat, like you say, it really doesn't faint. It's just its muscles lock up and it falls over, and it usually gets right back up right after that happens.
Yes,
correct?
Yes.
All right.
It does.
All right. Well, again, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We're having a James Coover and a David Scronson from the K-State Extension offices. And when we come back, we'll have more of them at around 18. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Wednesday morning. And we are back here for Greenside Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. I hope everybody's doing well out there. 61 degrees now. The temperature keeps getting a little bit lower out there. Of course, I like it in the 60s and 50s. I will still wear shorts then. And back in studio with us is David Scrantz and James Coover. Guys, welcome back. How you doing?
Good. Doing good.
All right. Well, James, we'll go ahead and start this part off with you again. And you wanted to talk about beet planting.
Wheat planting.
Wheat,
yeah,
beet,
we don't
both.
A lot of beets around.
Right, so wheat planting. So
I don't think they would survive.
I think I misheard that apparently. So, all right, but wheat planting
that would be
though.
Interesting, but so wheat planting. We're just about. Well, I guess it might be some beets planted around here in cover crops, but corn is drying down. It's getting harvested now, so we're just right on the beginning of wheat planting season, and so. Before planting wheat, though, there are some things that you just got to get done before it goes in. And we have a little bit of time left between when corn gets harvested. Really don't want to start planting wheat until the first, second, third week of October. Too early, and you could run into some issues. But the soil is kind of cooling down now, so we're getting there pretty fast. The first thing is soil fertility. And if you need to adjust your soil fertility, you need to do that soon, as in take the soil test soon, because to get those sent back recommendations and all that, we don't have much time left. So, and really, wheat is somewhat sensitive to soil pH, but soybeans are more sensitive to soil pH. And so, which is why right now we have to be looking at that, because right after our wheat, we go right into double crop soybeans. I mean, around here, we don't wait. And so...
Don't waste any time. We get right with it.
Yes. And so we have to prepare for our soybeans in our wheat crop. And so if those soybeans need to be limed, they need to be limed now because there won't be time later. And so it's important to get those pHs adequately level. And don't expect your pHs to be even across the field. If you're kind of on the line in some places... it's very likely that you're going to be way too acidic in other places. And so to get that lime out there. And of course, when it comes to wheat, you can talk about nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. The wheat crop probably needs around 30 to 40 pounds of nitrogen to start off with. It doesn't need all that much. And so it's better to kind of lightly dress it in the fall to just get it going, but then put the rest of the nitrogen on in the spring. Usually we have too wet of a weather around here, and that nitrogen all kind of leaves when it gets warm. This year can seem kind of dry, so I don't know whether nitrogen's going to go. But also, if you kind of be careful with your varieties as well. We have a lot of varieties that are developed around here. There's all kinds of new varieties from K-State, all the other genetic places, the seed companies, and OSU that grow well around here. Just make sure that they're disease resistant. We got a lot of diseases around here. And so really kind of watching that. If you had issues with diseases in the past, it's probably time to change things up and go with the progeny of something that you're used to is fine. And so However, when it comes to planting, you can't just plant by bushels to the acre, like what we do with a lot of other things. You really need to plant by seeds per acre. And so you can calculate it and then go back to pounds per acre or however it is, a bag or whatever. But first you need to make sure that the number of seeds in the bag is the right amount. So you have to count those seeds. And you could do that by hand, just pour a bunch out, count them, weigh them out, and do that a few times to get the average. Or you can send it off to the genetics or the Kansas Crop Improvement Association, and they will count the seeds for you. Or if you're planting a new crop, the number will be on the bag. But I'm just saying, though, is that around here we plant about 1.1 to 1.4 million seeds. However, wheat seed size can be a half to twice in size, depending on the variety, depending on if it was bin run wheat or not. And so if you plant purely based upon poundage, you can end up underplanting or overplanting by 30-40% or more. It's going to completely change the yield dynamics in the field if you do that. So you need to be careful and calibrate the seed size to the drill and know how much you're actually planting in your acreage.
It can be a little time consuming trying to get that counted out, but it will pay off in the long run, correct?
Yes. And so in that time period, that short time period between the, I don't know what you're doing now, maybe it's kind of wet outside now, so now's a good time to get all that stuff counted and calibrated and get the drill set just right. Because yeah, if you wait, you'll never seem to have time, but before it needs to get planted. And so a lot of guys, though, if you're planning on grazing wheat, you want to get that in as soon as possible. Honestly, about a couple weeks ago was the right time to get it for grazing, but we have to wait till after the corn's out anyway. So usually when you're grazing wheat, you want to increase the population a little bit. You probably want to increase the nitrogen a little bit as well, because it's not going to branch out as much because you're taking all that top off. You're taking the energy, so it's not going to tiller. You want at least 3 or 4 tillers going into the winter before it freezes out. It will tiller a little bit in the spring, but for the most part, most of its tillering is going to happen now. So you need to get that set right, and hopefully we'll get some rain here. Hopefully the corn crop has somewhat captured enough rain, enough moisture as it's drying down, that there's plenty in that base. But with the dry weather, I mean, maybe not here, but in parts of the area, there's no subsoil moisture. It's all gone.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we haven't really had any good recharging rain like we normally do. Normally we're going into fall and we're just wet, saturated. But this year, not so much. So hopefully the corn has captured some. We'll get in there, get that wheat germinated, and then we'll catch some rains here pretty soon to get that subsoil, at least started the wheat in the right direction.
Right. I've noticed that for whatever reason, just with the exception of that rain that we had a couple of weeks ago, that it been fairly dry before that. So just not a whole lot of rain, and I know that's probably hurt a little bit.
Yeah. And those 1-inch rains help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But a 1-inch rain, I mean, it doesn't get that far down there. I mean, it doesn't
right.
get more than a foot or less.
It's basically
actually.
The topsoil absorbs it. It doesn't
yes.
get far down into the soil to kind of get things going down there.
Yeah, and we have some warm days coming up, too, so a lot of that's going to evaporate. So we're not really going into winter with a very set way when it comes to the wheat, but wheat doesn't need a lot of moisture, at least in the beginning. So we should be all right with the amount that we got anyways, at least to get it germinated. And so another thing about the wheat, though, around here we have Italian ryegrass. I kind of talked about it on the show in the past. You cannot control Italian ryegrass right before wheat starts joining. When a lot of guys try to spray a herbicide to treat it, it does not work well. It's too resistant. It's become resistant to our herbicides. It needs to be treated with a pre-post germination herbicide, basically right after germination, or if you need to treat it, I mean, earlier is always better if you're trying to deal with Italian ryegrass. It's a real pain around here.
And it just, when it sprouts up, it's hard to get rid of, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Italian ryegrass, it germinates after the wheat. It developed its seed head before wheat, and so the combine just spreads it around. It's become resistant to ALS herbicides, which is the vast majority of our grass herbicides in wheat. So it's going to continue to spread until we start to use more and better technologies on it.
So again, hopefully we can, hopefully if we, unfortunately, if you unfortunately have that out there, hopefully you can get rid of it pretty quickly. But what's the best way to get rid of it, though? Obviously, if you have it, you want to get rid of it as soon as possible. What's one of the best ways to get rid of it? Because you said some of the herbicides have kind of that the grass come resistant to some of the herbicides.
Yes. And so using a pre-post herbicide, basically when the wheat is 80% to like 100% germinated, and it's just a tiny little green spike. Mm-hmm. You spray a herbicide on there. It doesn't affect anything that's already growing. And so this is a pure a seed killer, basically, herbicide. And that's Zidua, Anthem Plus. It's things in the group 14 and 15 herbicides. And those are the ones that will at least stop the wheat, the Italian ryegrass that has not germinated yet. Mm-hmm. And often you can actually mix in another herbicide to kill the ones that have as well that germinate the exact same time as the wheat.
But it won't hurt the wheat, though.
Yes, it won't hurt the wheat if you use it the right time and with the right rate. If you do it too early, you'll definitely hurt the wheat.
But, right.
Yeah, at the right time, it won't hurt it. And
you just want that wheat to be sprouted just a little bit, basically just coming out of the ground.
Yes.
That's the best time to apply that, correct?
Yes, yes. And if you have the soil right, it won't really hurt the wheat that you run over, too, because wheat's pretty resistant to getting smashed over. So if you do it the right time, it should come out pretty all right, and if the ground isn't too wet. So, hopefully
you don't have that sound in ryegrass, but because it sounds like it's a pain that it just when it gets in there, it doesn't leave. So yeah. If you do have that, you can take care of it. If you don't have it yet, just be kind of on the watch out for that, and maybe apply that that herbicide. What did you say, pre and post herbicide?
Yeah, it's called it's a pre germination.
Okay,
it's a post germination herbicide.
Right, yeah. Right, all right. And do you have anything else on wheat as of right now?
Not really. I mean, besides wheat. Cover crops, of course, are being planted at the same time. Usually we like to plant those a little bit earlier, but we plant them when the corn comes out. So mm-hmm. Whenever the corn is done, we can start to put in the cover crops, and it's pretty much the exact same thing as putting in the wheat. But we have all kinds of different cover crops that we can use. Most of them will be grazed, which is good. You need to do something with them. And you kind of need a little bit of nitrogen when it comes to putting in cover crops. Some guy, I don't know, don't really worry about it because it's just there anyway. So, but it's sort of the same deal as planting wheat. It's time to get started and get everything ready for that. So,
all right. Well, thank you very much, James. I want to come back to David real quick. Just a few things I did want to ask you about goats real quick. You're saying there's seven different types. What is the most common type of goat that's found in Kansas?
Oh, that's a good question. So when it comes to meat goats, the boar goat is probably the most common. Those are used a lot for 4-H and FFA kids to show at fairs. For dairy goats, it varies a little bit more, but the most popular breeds of dairy goats that you'll see a lot at shows that 4-Hers may be showing is kind of like split between Alpine Nubian and Nigerian Dwarf. There's not necessarily one that is the most popular, but those three seem to be the most popular. Boar goats, they may be the most popular statewide, just because over about the last 10 years, they've really seen an increase in popularity, more people raising meat goats, and then also more 4-H and FFA kids raising them as their project. So it might be the boar cross.
And this may be a silly question, but as somebody who has never had goat milk before, how much different does it taste than, say, cow's milk?
It does taste a little bit different than cow's milk. James and I were actually talking about goat milk during the break.
I think it tastes like licking a goat.
So I think it can actually taste good. I used to raise dairy goats. It will vary a little bit depending on the breed of goat. Nubians and Nigerian Dwarfs have the higher butterfat content to their milk. So that will give it a little bit richer taste, creamier taste than cow's milk. Whereas the Alpine doesn't have that high butterfat content, so it will taste more similar to cow's milk. But goats are can also be influenced, the taste of their milk can be influenced by what they're eating, so that can be a big factor too. So I think it tastes good personally. It does depend a little bit on the goat and the goat's diet. Some people don't really prefer the taste, but it is naturally homogenized. So some people that aren't able to drink cow's milk can drink goat's milk without any problems.
Because again, it's unlike cow's milk, it's naturally, I mean, it could be frozen and drink, or well, cooled and drinking pretty much pretty soon after getting it, correct?
Yes, it's just important when, that's the other thing that can affect the taste is shortly after, basically as soon after milking as possible, you want to, of course, strain the milk to get out any particles of dirt that may have gotten in there. And then after you've strained the milk, you have it in your glass jars, you want to ice that down right away to cool it off, and that will also help the taste of it.
Well, I may have to try it sometimes.
So. And it's also important to note that the canned goat milk that you find in the stores does not taste the same as fresh goat milk. So if you're wanting to try goat milk, I don't recommend trying the canned milk because that's not an accurate representation.
it's not fair to the goats.
Yeah.
but the stuff you get basically soon right after out of the bottle, you say that's the kind that tastes the best.
Yes.
All right. So cool. Very, very cool. Well, guys, if anybody has any questions for you guys, how can they contact each of you about what we've been talking about, or maybe some other questions?
You can call any of the local extension offices. You probably know the one for Independence.
But yes.
the one for Girard is 620-724-8233. And
then the number for the Independence office is 620-331-2690, but like James said, you can call any of the offices and they'll be able to transfer your call directly to the other office wherever we are at that day.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. We always appreciate it. We always love and see you in on Wednesdays, and we will see you guys again next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to have Open Line. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Wednesday morning.